Hello, friends. My name is Virgil Cantrip, and I'm about to take you on a journey. A journey to a place both familiar and distant, both dangerous and welcoming. A land of wasted dreams and of opportunity. A land that I call the United States of Apocalypsia. Together, we are going to meet some fascinating characters, surviving and thriving out there in the waste. Perhaps with their stories and a little help from my trusted Atlas Almanac, we can piece together a story of what happened here, what is happening, and most importantly, what happens next. Ahead of us, massive gate doors flanking both sides of the canal, welded together from the scrapped remains of old boat wrecks, vehicle doors, and other scraps of metal, moved slowly open. A large sign of welded scrap metal looming over it, with two words molded from the twisted steel. Dive Town. We sped past the open gate into new waters. As Lafayette guided the boat forward, he told me of the Council of Reclaimers, the closest Dive Town has had to a local organized government. Since the city tends to ignore this part of town, it is assembled from the very best of divers. Everyone who is a member of the council is a master of their craft, and we are to meet them in the lodge. As we move forward, Dive Town comes into view. It is a shanty town built on top of the old flooded bywater. Few buildings in this part of the city survived the years of storms and floods. Their ruined rooftops are mostly seen peeking through the water, revealing their submerged houses and shops beneath the surface. Most barely rise above the water, to make the shaky foundations for the homes and shops built on top. We pass a few structures built this way, and then see the real heart of Dive Town. At the center is a series of wooden shacks built high up on old dock pylons. The houses are connected by shaky rope bridges, resting well above the water to leave space for boats to drift underneath them. The houses have ramshackle walls constructed of driftwood and old steel and bricks and cinder blocks. These must not be sturdy houses. Few of the homes have rusted metal rooftops, recovered from everything from vehicle parts to shipping containers. Most others make do with scraps of cloth taken from tarps and tents. Some lack roofing at all. Others lack walls, entirely open to the harshness of the outside and at the mercy of the weather. Most look highly damaged following the storm. I assume many of these had walls and roofs until a few days ago. Still, many of these homes appear to be just docks with mattresses and sleeping bags strewn about. These must be sturdy people. Lafayette looks around at his home with a sad smile on his face and says, "Now listen here, Virgil. Dive Town ain't pretty, but she got heart. We divers pulled this city back from the sea, and ain't nobody appreciate that." "Well, I appreciate that. I would have never gotten to see the city had you not," I say to him, and Lafayette's somber expression turns into a slight grin. We dock our boat at the largest of the humble structures. This one at least has a strong foundation on the roof of an old market. Through the water I can see a distorted name, Roses. At least that's what I think it says. The waters here are actually clearer than in other parts of the city. Lafayette hears my remark and explains that it's because the divers have taken to clearing the worst of the trash and debris here. They've taken pride in their cleanup. Lafayette docks to Pandora and leads me to a long row house with double mismatched doors of green and red. And he says, "Welcome to the lodge house. The Divers Council meets in here, and we are due to meet now. Since we have King Louis's commission for our little venture, we're gonna need a team of the best there is round these parts." And there, gathered inside, around a large map of old New Orleans, on an old intricate wooden table, stood the Council of Reclaimers. At the head of the table, a large, bearded giant of a man, who introduced himself simply as Bo. His skin looks tougher than leather. His sagging eyes reveal his tiredness. He has long been president of the council, and has fought for decades to build up Dive Town.
He regards me with a smile, hidden behind a long gray beard. He looks familiar. I believe... Yes, I recognize him from the Lantern Festival. To his right, a slender older woman introduces herself. Her name is Celine. She has thick bifocal glasses that magnify her eyes as she turns to face us. Her long white hair is partially covered under a turquoise blue hood, part of her modified diving suit. And to Beau's left is a girl about Lafayette's age, named Estelle. She has long dark hair and stands confidently, though much shorter than Beau and the others. She gives me a passing glance and returns to looking intently at the map. Standing in the corner, near the lodge house's windows and away from the table, is a tan mustachioed man that Lafayette introduces as Giancarlo. He is not a member of the council, but has been invited to the special session by Lafayette. All of the counselors have their own unique expertise that they bring to the council and hopefully to our expedition. Afant tells me that Celine has the best sight underwater, and I look to her in disbelief. Are the glasses part of it? I ask, and she laughs, taking them off to rub the lenses clear, and says, I don't need glasses to see underwater, just on land. Lafayette steps to the table and begins. I have gathered you all, because you, my fellow council members, are the best of the best. Beau, Mr. Council President, you are the strongest and oldest of all of us. You built Dive Town. Let's make it even better. He turns to Estelle and says, Estelle, you are a Dive Town orphan, like me, and nobody can swim faster than you. You've got just as much to gain and nothing to lose. And Celine, you see better than all of us underwater. We wouldn't get very, very far without you seeing what's up. You've invested just as much into the city as the rest of us. Maybe even more. I want all of you to join me and Giancarlo on this expedition, not only for the gold, but for the glory of Dive Town. Lafayette ends with a salute to the council, who stand to salute him in return. He then embraces Giancarlo with a warm hug, and he motions for me to introduce myself to the council. Hello, friends. My name is Virgil Cantrip, traveler from beyond the city, and well, I suppose I am also envoy of the king for this expedition. Beau laughs at my serious tone and bids me to take a seat. The rest take their seats around the table and look down at the map, illuminated by large windows open to the outside and the dim light of a soul-dirty bulb hanging from the ceiling on a rusted chain. Lafayette starts back immediately. Well, let's get down to business. Giancarlo and I have found Hera's fortune, the Bank of Legends, the one that holds hundreds of gold chips in its vault. He pushes down the pin on a spot on the map, at the border of two areas, marked Danger and Death. It lies south of the city, in the old Algiers. On the map, it is one of the last areas not fully crossed out and colored in red. We can take my boat in and out. The hull shan't be too heavy for her. That area is in the danger zone, so we gotta be extra careful, you know? Celine interrupts. Dangerous. Suicide is more like it. That is on the very edge of the divable zones. Everything past there has crumbled all to hell. Nobody survives diving out there, and I mean nobody. Forget about it. There's more than enough death and treasure to go around in the rest of the city. That area belongs to the sea, and the giants who stake claim of it. It is certain death for any of us, and for any other fool dumb enough to join us. And she shoots a look right at me. Estelle stands up and says, Well, what do we have to lose? Our lives have not been improving with the halls over the years. Are we going to miss the chance to take back a treasure? The likes that none in Dive Town or old New Orleans have ever seen. I stand with Lafayette. Celine interjects. Sit down, Estelle. Every expedition over there has lost people. Some have not come back at all. We have everything to lose. You are too young to throw away your life. Way join in Lafayette's foolhardy endeavor. We all have too much to lose. And she looks around at all of us. Even you, stranger. And especially you, Lafayette. And she takes a deep breath and turns to face him and Giancarlo solely. Celine addresses them now in a more gentle tone. Forget these harebrained treasure hunts. Open that school for Divetown that you both have talked about. Stop being so careless with your lives. And it is then that Bo slams his mighty hand onto the table.
Now it appears we have a divided council in the matter of Councilor Lafayette's expedition. Giancarlo, Virgil, I'm sorry, but your votes do not count in this council matter. We will not take the expedition without a majority council, and I have still reserved my final judgment.
Estelle turns to Lafayette and says, deciding things was a lot easier when we had 5 members on the council. Celine responds back, we lost Jean-Paul searching for that same treasure you two are pushing in for now. Lafayette stands up abruptly and pulls something out of his pocket, slamming it down onto the table. He lifts his palm slowly from on top of the object, revealing it to be the glimmering gold token brandished with Hera's signature trademark.
This is the proof that convinced King Louis. This is my final argument. We will find the rest, with or without the council. For the future of Divetown and its flourishing, join me to make this expedition a success. I promise that everyone gets an equal share, including the folks of Divetown, and I have not shown this coin to anyone besides y'all, my Giancarlo, and King Louis. And there are more in that ruined bank, I guarantee it.
Examining the coin carefully in his colossal hands, Bo sighs, looks down, and he begins laughing like he finally caught the punchline of a complex joke.
It is real, ladies and gents. 'Tis a real gold coin from Hera's vault. There's no doubt about it. That there's a treasure on our hands, and it must be recovered before it's gone forever. I'm with you, Lafayette.
Celine makes one final plea to the council to rethink their decision and urges Estelle not to join the expedition. At Estelle's insistence, it is Celine, rather, who concedes to join the expedition, as she says, only to ensure that everyone comes back alive. The council depart and begin making preparations for the coming expedition. I spend the rest of the evening with Giancarlo walking through Divetown, as the others continue making preparations. You're not from Divetown, are you? How did you end up here of all places? I ask him. Giancarlo looks up at the reddish-purple skies of the evening sunset changing into night. Jackson saved my life, in more ways than he knows. I grew up the son of 2 teachers living in the sunken quarter. We lived in modest dorms and schoolhouses. Both my parents got real sick and died when I was young. Some of the other families offered to take me in after it happened, but I was angry. I was so angry at everyone and at no one. I ran away from the school and the city, looking for answers to questions that are beyond answering. I did not get very far, to be honest. After I reached the gates on the edge of the city, I realized that no one leaves without a boat. I ran out of land to run on, and had no boat. I decided to swim. I was not about to turn back and return to the emptiness of my cold home. And then what happened? Well, I began flailing immediately in the water after jumping in. This attracted all kinds of attention from creatures in the water looking for an easy meal. Snakes and alligators, real common in these waters. They seek refuge and food in the city. I was a tasty-looking treat, making all sorts of commotion in the waters that day. I saw the alligators closing in. They would have had an easy time. I could barely keep my head above the water, and my arms were already starting to give way. After taking in more water than I could handle, I felt a jerk in motion as my arm was grabbed. I blacked out. I remember thinking in those moments that at least I could join my parents soon again. I woke up on a pier in Divetown. Pressing down upon my chest was the most beautiful person I'd ever seen, like an angel from the deep. There we were, in a small shanty with no windows and a leaky top roof. A lantern was lit. There it was in the corner, the body of that freshly killed gator. And that was the day I met Jackson. That was the day he saved my life.
What an incredible tale. Thank you for sharing it with me. What more can you tell me about the people of Divetown? About the city?
Giancarlo continues. The Divetown was formed before the reign of the first King Louis. It started as a settlement of divers, who made their living salvaging from the ruins of the city beneath them.
Illnesses and genetic defects were common effects of all of the time spent in the polluted waters, and truly these problems still affect divers today. While others in the community were rebuilding their lives above the water, the divers chose to spend more and more time reclaiming the lost treasures to aid in the rebuilding of the city. The divers were treated with scorn and disrespect, even though they performed a valuable and crucial service. I asked Giancarlo how the council formed. He tells me that Bo was the first diver to claim the need for organizing, that he and a few like-minded friends formed the council, much like the one we saw today. It was Bo who pushed for the council's recognition from King Louis III, and the only reason Jackson is a member of the old New Orleans City Council is because of Bo. Giancarlo adds in, things certainly changed for us after that. Contrary to what Estelle said, life for the people of Divetown has been improving slowly over the years. Jackson is ambitious, though. Proposing such a dangerous expedition is just like him to do. I worry about him sometimes. He risks his life and the lives of others far more than he realizes. He's always been lucky and hasn't had to deal with real loss. I don't think he considers what the others have lost. Celine and Beau, especially, have lost so many friends and family to the water. So that is why they were weary to join the expedition. They should be weary with all they've been through. I hope our luck stays. The payoff here would be enough for all of us to retire to comfortable lives and truly do some great, great things for Divetown. I hope this is the last expedition for us. Every time Jackson goes under, I worry it will be the last time I see him. Well, what precautions will we take to make sure everything goes smoothly? You all are experts, but I'm new to this. I'm always up for a new adventure, but I too would like to return in one piece. The people of the Wastes need me. Giancarlo leads me back to the dock on the other side of the lodge house. On its far side is Lafayette's boat, fully loaded with 5 pairs of diving suits and masks, underwater flashlights, ropes, radio headsets, barrels of fresh water, and tanks of air. The crane was fully cleaned and prepped with a new metal platform for lowering into the water. On the bow of the ship, Bo and Lafayette leaned against the rails. Bo held a bottle in his hand and a lit cigarette illuminating the near darkness surrounding them. Lafayette, noticing our steps, lit his lantern and waved us over. He opened a cooler and pulled out 2 old-looking bottles.
"It's a long-standing diver's ritual," says Bo, as he pulls out a knife to open my bottle for me. "I guess that makes you one of us now. We'll make it official tomorrow. I hope you can swim well, because this ain't gonna be a dip in the pool."
Celine and Estelle walk up, armed to the teeth with 5 harpoon guns. Lafayette climbs back onto the dock to greet them. Bo regards my inquisitive look with a laugh.
"Have you ever fired a harpoon, son?"
"Is that what those are?" I ask him. The Atlas Almanac and I have not spent any much time at sea. The entries on this trip alone have nearly doubled its nautical knowledge. Do you think we will need them?
I pray we don't, but I fear we will,
Bo says solemnly. Celine and Estelle climb on board with the last of the harpoon spears. Lafayette hands them both bottles from the cold chest, cracking them open with Bo's knife. It is then that they all raise their bottles and make a toast to the city, to the divers, to the drowned, and to the sea. We spend the rest of the moment drinking in the silence. Celine, breaking the calm, moves to the back of the boat and wipes her thick lenses on her freshly cleaned hood. She begins to take stock of everything on board, eyeing every last detail up and down the ship. That's the last of it. Who will be guarding for the night? Giancarlo waves his hand out. It's our boat. We'll take care of everything. She'll be ready to go first light. Hope the rest of you will be too. Good to hear, boys, says Celine, and then she climbs onto the dock, calling for Estelle to join her on their walk back to the boats. Bo then wishes us a good night, tips his hat, and walks toward the small boat docked at the end of the pier. Well, friends, it is certainly about time for some rest for your old pal Virgil, too. This day has been long, and tomorrow, I suspect, will be much longer. Lafayette hands me a rolled-up towel.
Here's your pillow.
And he motions to the deck of the boat. There's your bed. Better get some shut-eye.
Tomorrow, we dive.